We'll talk about Quent City Poets today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Members of Quent City Poets have monthly meetings. We'll chat with Catherine Searle, who calls them to order, on Scribble. That is odd, having a typewriter sound when we talk about scribbling.
What's a typewriter?
You know, I actually have my old correcting Selectric IBM enthroned on a little table, and I haven't touched it since it blew a tire, or threw a tire one night, and for the first time I had to use a computer. And once I discovered how easy it was to move things around, oh, poor old IBM. Do you type or do you scribble?
I do both. Sometimes I start on paper and then move to the computer. And sometimes I just start on the computer. It just kind of depends on the mood of the moment.
When you say start, what do you mean?
Write.
I mean, how does a poem begin?
I usually see something that sticks in my mind. Things usually start with an image, and then they go somewhere else. So it's a it's a discovery every time people write, I believe.
Before we get into your poetry, tell us about Quent City Poets. What is that? How does it work? And so on.
It's just a group of like-minded individuals who like to write, and unfortunately, it's hard to write with no audience. And you get lazy and you don't write because who cares? Nobody's reading it. So for me, the group is a way to continue writing when I'm very busy with many other things. So I at least write once a month. Mm-hmm. I used to write a lot more when I was younger, when everything seems so much more intense and difficult. And as I get older, I wait for the meeting and then I write something.
I think I
Which
just
is terrible.
Found, I think I just found an out. You know, as you get older, you right. tend not to write, so I don't feel ashamed.
Okay, then.
I'm just aging. But how'd you get to be president? Did you campaign, you know, with the
Oh, no, no.
So?
Max Mollison moved to Coralville. That's how I became the president. So,
how old is Quent City Poets? Do you have?
I do not know. John McBride was a president once, and Max for quite a few years. And now me.
I came in 1960, and I think it was going then.
I believe so. A woman started it. Can't remember her name, but Dick Stahl knew her.
Right.
So.
What were you doing at a poets' meeting, Tweet?
What?
What were you doing
I just knew about it because I knew Dick Stahl. He was one of my students. Uh-huh. And so I knew he went to something called Quent City Poets. And then I see the ads the notices in the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
But I've never been because
well,
I can't.
Well, you should come.
I can't write poetry, Catherine.
Oh, I bet you can.
I can listen to it. I love listening to it, and I love teaching it.
Uh-huh.
No.
And you just rashly said a little while ago, when I said I'm going to the next poetry meeting and I'm going to bring up some poems, and you said you would.
I was too enthusiastic. I don't know what it is. You know, I can write anything else, but mm-hmm. I sit down to write a poem and they just turn out absolutely stupid.
We've talked a lot about people's, you know, people being bashful and so on, and yet you admitted that you have written some poems.
And
you constantly tell me you can't.
Well, I don't think they're very good. I'll come to the next meeting and we'll see.
Well, that would be awesome.
And they will tear them apart.
No, okay. No. No, it's
well,
not like that.
Dale Hockey's there. I know what he'll do. So. And Dick Stahl won't dare to say anything.
Oh, he can be quite vocal.
Dick can?
Yes, he can.
Boy, that's not the Dick I know. Dick I know is, you know, far too diffident for his own good, I think. So, I'm intrigued by the fact that you write for the group. Does that alter what you write then? I mean,
no.
Dale Hockey's really going to like this, or?
No. It's what I feel, what I think, what I see.
Okay.
To me, poetry, it's kind of like you're the other. You see things and feel things differently, and nobody really understands your reality. So in writing, your reality is made public.
So what's the good of having it discussed by five other poets?
Well, I don't revise. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but whatever I
you
write.
Mean ever?
Ever, unless I misspell a word. Then I do revise.
Okay.
But whatever I write.
You realize it's how done. Unusual that is.
Well, it has not been popular at the group.
Okay,
so how long did it take you to do that? And yeah, I do it pretty quickly.
I had a student once, a freshman, and I have conferences with him, and, mm-hmm. and she brought a theme in, and I said, well, this needs revision. And she said, I don't revise.
Oh, no.
And I said,
no, I would revise
I said,
that
you
kind
don't
of
revise. Why not? She says, it's cheating because then I'm, if I revise, I'm lying. Because what I said here, I said, I meant.
Right? Well, you can always mean better. Nothing in writing is ever finished. You can always improve on it, a different take on it.
But how does that fit with no revision?
I don't know. Would you like to hear one?
Yes,
I did not revise.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Let me get out my editing pen.
Oh, okay. I prefer green.
Okay.
This was printed in Out Loud Anthology in 2009, and I was creating a brochure for the Holocaust Education Committee, and I was waiting for graphics to load because I was going to have a slideshow behind it. So this is what happened while I was creating the brochure, mm-hmm. and it's called The Brochure. Waiting for the graphics to load, intent on the purpose and audience, choosing well is important if the message is to be received and understood. Slowly, the images appear from top to bottom, almost apologetic, rolling out in black and white images, stark and stoic pain and horror trapped forever on servers. The story told in uncaptioned images, pieces of the puzzle surfacing stubbornly, tenacity in the eyes of the haunted, starved faces, so like other starved faces, shaved heads and skin sucked taut over sharp bones, offer little individuality, limbs so thin, bones must be hollow, but not enough to fly away. Grounded in hatred, they speak for themselves, willing and unwilling witnesses to what happens when humanity is sucked out like the parasite it seeks to dislodge. Each image is worse than the last. Mothers with little children, their anguish too much. Implicit in the image, the parent's dilemma. Smother the child and end what comes next, or hope for escape or invisibility. Close-ups of wagons full of bodies, naked limbs splayed out in mute acceptance. God is on leave. The young women of a proud, strict culture, untried, dream of a boyfriend's arms and sweet kisses on summer holidays, suffer the indignity of being tossed onto the heap, male and female bodies touch without warmth, without introduction. The cruel complexity of pickup stick tumbled bones in the mass graves makes way for the next firing line victims. The scent of fear is a tangible thing, as real as the fetid odor of burning calcium hanging in the air. Ignore the faces wailing mutely from the grave. Choose graphics to avoid offending. Fix the margins. Work on the color scheme. Add a few famous quotations. Revise and edit. Send to the printer with a single click. But they are not forgotten. They have a voice strong enough to drown out the hatred of those not pictured. Their passive testimony lives with strength and a purity born of fire. They will not be denied.
What brochure was that?
I made a brochure for the Holocaust Education Institute where they have little mini speeches, speakers, and people
wow.
pay to come and talk about Holocaust-related things.
That's powerful stuff, Catherine.
Thank you.
So if you don't revise, where did that, I mean, how did those words get down on the page? How long did it take?
Maybe a half hour.
Ooh, you've got a lot of people in the audience for this, very envious of you. But I'm reminded, you know who else never revised?
Oh, this is going to be bad, right?
No.
Okay.
It's very good, D.H. Lawrence.
Okay.
I did a paper on him, so I went down to visit his widow when I was a senior in college, and she showed me manuscripts and stuff of his work, and there would be pages of his beautiful prose that he wrote and his poetry, and occasionally there might be a word crossed out and another word put in.
Right.
But he did not revise. And he wrote a poem, in fact, explaining it. He said that when you write, the creative process bypasses your brain, and it goes right out through your fingers to your pencil. And he titled that poem, "Not I, But the Wind That Blows Through Me."
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me like that's sort of what's going on there.
Boy, I'd like to know how that works. That sounds great.
Well, you just heard some.
Yeah, how does that work, Catherine?
I don't know.
Let's have another one right away.
Okay. I kind of have three separate categories, kind of more political and some very personal and some just I wrote something because I had to and it turned out okay. So
okay.
This one is called Spirit Walk. Beads of condensation pool and run down my glass, leaving lacy tracks in old varnish, protected for years with old lady doilies. I hated your studied carefulness, and in the shining brilliance of youth, judged you harshly, living behind drawn blinds, a shadowy figure scurrying around the kitchen, the boundaries of your world between those four walls. House dresses, hose, and sturdy black shoes tied tight, comprised a uniform varied only on club days, good jewelry wrapped and hidden in drawers, in your house of dead secrets, the air sucked out, careful even in senility, waiting 3 hours a day for a milkman's delivery, years after the dairy closed. I wanted to know about you, how wound tight like a clock you skimmed the surface, lukewarm like the pale coffee you drank at the appointed hours, never breaking into raucous laughter or slipping into shuddered sighs. I wanted to know why you lived in a gray plane, controlled and modulated and utterly joyless. I still have your things, a citrine ring whose sparkles fascinated me as a child, vases labeled in your spidery hand, bequeathed before your hair turned white, a treasured recipe collection, blotched with uncharacteristic spills. I know many of them by heart, and sometimes feel your hand over mine as I cream the butter sugar mixture of your chocolate chip cookies.
That's not fair.
No, that
That's
is not.
That's just not fair. You know, you just sit down and write that stuff. That's not fair.
So, well, I'm not sorry.
I gather that you know, obviously, no one in the United States is a professional poet. You can't make a living at it.
No.
So is poetry for you, it's got to be more than a hobby, right?
Well, I think it has saved my sanity many times, yes.
How does it do that?
Once you put something down, once it comes out of you in some kind of a form, you can walk away from it. Whatever it is that's horrible or is on your mind, the act of putting it down somehow takes it away.
Why would you want to take it away?
Life has been difficult many times. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of dealing with things. And I try to get students interested in that because they deal with so many issues and they don't have anyone to talk to. And it's a way to know people and to get value from people because of that special kind of communication. I might not be able to talk to a kid, but I can read something to them that will help them understand or see what they can do.
Well, now, something that is deeply personal, would you publish it?
I have. I mean, the Out Loud thing and various contests. Yes, it's people say I'm somewhat of a confessional writer, which is probably possible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you teach poetry?
Well, we started today on getting into the Harlem Renaissance, and I do, but that's, to me, not teaching poetry. Teaching poetry would be sitting down with a kid and talking to them, and if they tell me what they want to write, but they say they can't, I'll write a couple of lines, and that's all it takes, and then they're good, and they can write. I recently had a student who came to my FlexiSCAD. We have like a half an hour built in the day for different activities, and I was doing a week or so on poetry, and I had some videos of found poetry, of slam poetry, and this girl started writing and got really into it and was really excited about it. And about a year later, her grandmother died, and she was in charge of writing something for the ceremony. And she brought it to me, and we read it together, and we both cried. And she said she wouldn't have been able to tell that story or share those emotions if she hadn't talked to me about writing. So sharing yourself, which is what writing is really, is helpful to kids, I think.
So that's much better, you think, than teaching metrics and
yeah,
rhyming?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you can do both.
Yeah.
You can.
Okay, what's the third?
Third
you,
what?
You said there are three types of poem.
Oh, well, it's not really three, but I have written about students, so.
Okay.
This one is called Voiceless. I don't know her story, but I can guess. She moves through the hallways, her body hugging itself, drawn to walls like a magnet. Even in the heat, she wears her brown hoodie like a shell. She does not speak. Eye contact misses like a picture hanging off kilter. She is not stupid. She is not slow. She is a ghost whose twin is psychotic. Never where she's supposed to be, she finds an alcove and becomes still, as if by not moving, she will disappear. Though I have offered her books, she steals them, hiding her contraband in hoodie pockets to incubate. I have tried to connect, even though I find her mute existence maddening. I can see her future story, dancing at street corners to the voices only she hears, lunging into traffic to get to somewhere safe. She used to hide under desks, they say. She has come a long way. But when I look into her spongy, dark eyes, I see the fear, stark and unabated, and I can do nothing.
These are...
That's powerful stuff.
Do you think all people are capable of writing poetry?
No. Some people are just too literal. Everything's black and white. They're not in tune with nature and the things they see.
And they can't be made to?
Oh, sure. You can teach the craft.
Yeah, but you can't
but
teach
heart,
the poem.
The spirit, the, yeah, and that's, what comes behind it.
You make it sound as if writing poetry is a kind of a deep communication or a means of understanding another person without...
Mm-hmm. Without saying.
Yeah, without mm-hmm. actually, with this one, mostly with just observing.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That's a powerful poem. Where do you publish your poems?
I don't. We do have a website, QC Poets. I made it. It's a Google site. So all you have to do is search QC Poets.
All right, Catherine.
It takes a lot of time to publish. And
yeah, but why do you...
I work.
Why hoard it? I mean, come on. Those are good poems. Those are great poems. You ought to publish them. And if... You know, find somebody who'll publish them for you. But mm-hmm. those are things that ought to have some circulation. And
I do share with certain people, but just because I'm excited about what I've written.
Uh huh.
You know, you have to have. Oh, look! What do you think of this?
I don't know, Catherine. You said earlier mm-hmm. that when Quint City Poets meetings are coming up. Then you sit down and write
right.
something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can write on order like that or on a deadline, do you reach deep in your psyche or do you write just whatever is around?
Well, a lot of times it's something that I see or just sitting at my kitchen table hearing the birds or the sun coming in the blinds and you start with an image and suddenly it turns into something. So this is one about shadow people. I see a lot of people on the way to work that are on the street, living there, and sitting at the light. You see these things. So I wrote shadow people.
Well.
All right. I see them on the way to work, quiet figures, unkempt, anchorless, walking or waiting for the bus, anonymous shadows, caught in the slipstream generated by people of purpose. They carry large trash bags full of clothes and blankets or empty cans. The more evolved wear backpacks and layered clothing, arms always covered. A few have dogs who keep their loyal pace, partners for life. Weathered faces etched in a patina of grime emit boundaries we do not cross. They are recognizable by turf, leaving parks as dew burns off, shuffling away from urine-soaked hallways, filing out of shelters. Joyless, they move from one street to another without destination, in a static state to avoid loitering, to avoid connecting. Their stories go with them, strong-hearted companions, and I wonder how they came to be modern-day nomads in a land of surplus. The degrees of separation strain as we live paycheck to paycheck, vulnerable to family disasters and economic uncertainty, just steps away from the unthinkable we choose to ignore.
Quinn City Poets meets once a month.
When? Correct. The first Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8:30.
And that's always at the Bettendorf Public Library?
Right, the Bettendorf Public Library. It seems to be kind of a central location.
And you are known to read your poems at those.
Oh, yeah. I always go last. Everybody else goes around the circle, and then it's my turn.
Well, you're the president. You get to do that. Give us one more before we go.
Okay. This is called A Tapestry. The commonplace restaurant sounds, cutlery, clinking glasses, and snatches of other people's lives gradually recede as your voice gathers itself, volume slightly raised, leaving no room for polite bites interspersed with conversation, and I feel the first prickling fear I cannot name. Pointed looks from across the table share my concern, but no one addresses the unraveling, opting for benign acceptance. Later, your words catapult over each other in a sad game of leapfrog, sentences without punctuation, a stream of convoluted run-ons, the manic edge now full-blown and undeniable. And suddenly, the downward spiral grabs you by its teeth and shakes, jaws locked, helpless. I listen, knowing no comment will be allowed. I cannot loosen the grip on your mind. Fears galloping into fears, exacerbated by sleepless nights, spent making lists of mundane tasks, lists whose items cannot be crossed out, but have to be rewritten to look perfect, a line through words a stain of unparalleled magnitude. Struggling to show no effect, I tamp down my tears, not wanting to add to your burden, but unable to exercise the need to apologize for whatever part I played in your inability to flourish as you flagellate yourself with a long list of failures defined by ill-perceived perceptions of societal norms others meet effortlessly. Humbled by your gut-wrenching sobs and unanswered pleas to God, begging for the magic key to be a good person, to be able to keep a job without showing up so deeply sad it leaks from your pores. I tell you what you cannot hear. You are a good, decent human being I love and respect with all my heart. Knowing the thoughts ricocheting through your mind at warp speed will not allow you to know what's true. You smile through your tears to assure me you'll be okay in a day or two. This only happens once a month. And my hands tremble uncontrollably with the knowledge of keeping this from me must have cost you.
Whoa. First Wednesday of every month, Bettendorf Public Library, 6:30 to 8:30, and Catherine will read a poem for sure.
Which she's just written.
Yes. Thank you very much, Catherine.
You're welcome.
That was a joy to listen to it and get those poems published.
All right.
You know, listening to Catherine reading those poems, they're really personal.
They are.
And deeply emotional. I think I can understand why she is hesitant to publish them, because they are so personal.
Well, but at the same time, she has an incredible command of language.
Oh, yeah.
And so they don't gush, right? I mean,
that's true.
Lots of confessional poetry sort of lets it all hang out, and she's really reserved in the
Very controlled all the way through, although the poems obviously move her when she reads them. Yeah, that's a real gift. And it also, you know, there's something about that in writing. I always feel you don't want to reveal too much of yourself. I reveal stuff all the time, but never anything that's really close. I think I'm kind of protecting myself that way.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, writing can be a very personal thing. Here's a book that you might be interested in by a guy named Brian Switek, Switek. It's, you know, following poetry, this is really a change, okay? It's called Skeleton Keys, The Secret Life of Bones. And this is, some of it's a little repetitious, some of it's technical, some is a little overwritten, but he talks about the 206 bones in your body and things about them you may never have thought of, how they're constantly dissolving and growing, some of the problems people have had, one person who's soft tissue was ossifying all the time, you know. One thing that I remember from comparative vertebrate anatomy, the jaws of an elasmobranch, which is a kind of a sea creature, through the course of evolution have become the three bones in our inner ear.
Oh.
Yeah. There's all kinds of interesting stuff in this. The secret life of bones. It's called Skeleton Keys, which is kind of a cutesy title, but a very appropriate one, by Brian Switek. I love books on science that delve into things that you otherwise would not even think of. But the skeleton is a fascinating place, and remember, it's within the bones that your blood cells are created. So it's a good idea to treat those bones well. And if you're looking for a nonfiction book that will stir your imagination, well, there it is. Skeleton Keys by Switek, Switek. That'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll see you next week for the next edition of Scribble.